lights out, and away we go.
Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on that.
Danny and Sunday have crashed. They've gone into each other.
I wasn't listening. No idea what you're speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello, I am Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we are the Two Soft Compounds. And we're going to be looking back at the Brazilian Grand Prix, all the post-race speak. And of course, it started off, I thought, a fairly normal, average race. And I thought, oh, this has potential to be a little bit boring. And then all of a sudden, the last sort of 15, 20 laps, it was mayhem. All sorts of stuff was happening. And it turned out to be a very, very good race in the end. Really exciting race.
Isn't it bizarre that the Brazilian Grand Prix, we always think it's going to be a procession, but it never is. It always throws up something. You know, I rewatched the classic race from 2003, which is the one where they all went off at turn three, including Michael Schumacher, and then they had the massive crash at the end with Webber in the Jaguar, and then Alonso came along and hit his tyre that had come off, and it was chaos.
Yeah, I remember that.
Brazil throws up lots of different interesting combinations. Of course, it was the track where Hamilton just about clinched the world title in 2008 on the final lap when Timo Glock suddenly slowed down. You know, there's always drama at Brazil, and this race was no different. You know, it had all kinds of good stuff in it.
Lots of rain sometimes at Brazil as well, isn't there, which spices things up. But you're right, it's one of those tracks. I noticed this year they've changed the pitch straight, haven't they, coming into the pits. They used to cut the corner as they come around that corner there. They used to really cut over the pit line.
That's right.
And they've kind of changed that. They've put all those kind of barriers up now, haven't they? You have to take a much wider line round. Because in previous years, I've thought that feels a bit dangerous to me. Like when you see the speed that they cut that corner. And obviously, if you're coming into the pits or not coming into the pits, it's a different, you know, line you're taking. But yeah, I noticed they've changed that this year, which was interesting. But yeah, it always throws up some exciting stuff. And pretty much what we said last week on the podcast, all the young guns were trying to prove themselves, weren't they?
They were, and they did well in the most part. Also, I think I've been vindicated in my boring Bottas statements all season long. You know, given the opportunity to overtake Leclerc, spent four laps stuck behind him, could not make the overtaking move stick. His car overheats and he retires. You know, Bottas says he's got a secret plan to beat Lewis Hamilton next year. What is it? Poisoning his breakfast?
He won't tell us.
No, because he's not going to do it on the track like that. I mean, all of the overtaking moves that were going on, Verstappen passed Hamilton twice for the lead of the race. All of the overtaking moves behind that, including Norris, including Sainz, who came up from 20th to finish in 4th, and now we know 3rd. All of that stuff. And there's Bottas, can't overtake to save his life behind Leclerc. Could have easily lunged down into turn 1, 2 or 3 laps on the trot, and didn't. And then, you know, the car overheats because he was ultimately following too closely without the overtake. Boring Bottas strikes again. He can't overtake.
Do you think they've made a big mistake not putting Ocon in that car next year then?
I don't know. You know, Ocon's going to go to Renault, and I feel as though it's almost a wasted opportunity because, you know, Renault have seriously got to book their ideas up. You know, they're beaten in the Constructors' Championship. McLaren now confirmed as 4th in the Constructors. They're using the Renault engine, and they've beaten the works team, which is deeply embarrassing. And then, you know, if they don't improve over the winter, and as we've mentioned many times, with minimal rule changes, and they've got some serious problems next year, Ocon, Ricciardo or not. You know, they just need to be faster.
It seems Ricciardo is kind of scrappy and, you know, almost desperate in some of the moves he's making. He's attempting moves that he would have done in the Red Bull that would have worked. And they're just very scrappy, and they're causing accidents and collisions and all sorts of stuff. And I can't work out if he's not got to grips with the car yet, if the car's nowhere near what the Red Bull was, if it's a combination of the two. But, you know, I've always thought he was a good racer, Ricciardo. Made some brilliant moves, always overtakes under braking. And, you know, he's done some very good moves in the past, but I just feel like he's very scrappy this year.
Yeah, very inconsistent. You're right. I think he has struggled with the car and the setup. And I think when the setup's extreme from one race to the other, and it changes a lot, I think he struggled to cope with that, with those changes. But you know, a great Brazilian race. Verstappen wins from pole, which is often the case at the Interlagos circuit. But it was a good, brave drive, and what a brilliant strategy call that was to bring him in for the 3rd pit stop, which meant he was on fresher tyres come the restart of the safety car period. Someone said to me this morning, why do they have a safety car for Bottas when he retired? His car was parked in a really good area. They just need to wheel it back. Apparently it was because they couldn't get the car into neutral, so the marshals weren't able to wheel it back, so they had to bring the JCB on. And now, of course, whenever that happens, they're going to throw the safety car out, which was good because it opened up the race and it gave us that drama on the restart. And because it's such a short lap in Brazil, they leave the restart till really late, don't they? They back the pack up until almost they're on top of the start-finish line, which makes the restarts really exciting on that track.
Mm. And we've got to talk about Ferrari because, you know, what a disaster that was, basically. Apparently, the Italian press are blaming Vettel more so than Leclerc. I've seen numerous footage clips of this from different angles, yeah. And it does appear Vettel comes across very slightly. I think they just didn't give each other enough room, and it was one of those accidents where I feel like they hit each other at such a random angle that it just caused all the damage it did, because the cars just fell apart, didn't they, when they hit each other? But it was very reminiscent of the Mark Webber crash as well with the Red Bull team
in Turkey
again. So, and that was Vettel. So, you know, you got to think, and like I said, the Italian press are blaming Vettel more than Leclerc, and you know, both are very angry. Vettel's very good at causing a crash and then getting immediately on the radio and going, "What was he doing?" And trying to like put blame elsewhere. What are your thoughts on that? Because for me, it was slightly more Vettel's fault.
When I saw the race live, I thought it was Vettel's fault. I think he'd made the pass. He was certainly more than two-thirds past Leclerc. And I think he was approaching turn three, and he started the turn fairly early, which meant he did come over to the left a little bit. But then, afterwards, I saw a freeze frame of Leclerc's cockpit camera, which clearly shows him putting a right-hand input into the steering wheel, slightly pointing to the right, which makes me think he was trying to squeeze Seb out onto the grass as they approach the braking zone for turn three. So I think overall it's probably 50-50 in my eyes. I think Leclerc didn't give him enough room and was obviously unhappy that he was trying to take the place back. And I think Seb thought he'd got far enough past him to start that move to the left-hand side. So I think ultimately it'll be a 50-50 thing where they were both to blame. But none more than the other, I don't think.
And Italian Harry Potter, Binotto, you know, how's he going to deal with this? Because it's been coming all season, I think. And I think the problem is now, you know, they've got one race left and then they go into 2020 with that kind of hostile team feeling of, you know, that was your fault. No, it was my fault. It was your fault. You know, so it's going to be, they need to kind of have a good race in Abu Dhabi and they need to sort that out ASAP. That doesn't bode well, does it, for a 2020? If you know, you're going to create another Senna and Prost scenario where you've got teammates that are both brilliant drivers, but every race causing each other to go off or causing each other to lose points. And that's something that Ferrari just cannot afford to happen.
I think I've felt a little bit sorry for Seb most of the season because he has been under pressure and he has made mistakes under pressure, which we've seen from him before. Leclerc's the young gun coming through. I think Leclerc has a tendency to spit his dummy out when he's not getting his own way. Seems very aggressive on the radio sometimes during races. I think Seb is more mature, obviously, more experienced. I think he's often the calmer of the two in those in-race situations. The fact that they came together in Brazil was probably the worst possible timing, but hopefully they're both mature enough to move forward. I know Leclerc said straight after the race, listen, we'll put it behind us, we're both mature guys, and hopefully they will. And I've been really impressed with Seb this year in the terms of, you know, when he went up to congratulate Hamilton in Mexico in the cool-down room, I thought that was a really nice touch. I think when he's made errors in the past, he's been the first to apologise. I've really sort of liked his demeanour, even though he's been under pressure and has made mistakes because of it.
And of course, Hamilton, you talking about that, Hamilton did exactly the same this weekend where he took out Albon. Very unusual for Hamilton to do that.
Yeah.
We've said this before on the podcast, he doesn't make those mistakes, does he? He's a very clean, fair driver. He made a mistake. He admitted immediately, yeah, my fault. I went for a gap. The gap was there, but he closed the door and, you know, it is what it is. And I believe he didn't even go to the stewards,
Defend himself, no.
Yeah.
I saw there was an in-car shot from Albon's car. As soon as he gets out of his car at the end of the race, Hamilton's waiting to put his arm around him and say sorry, which again is a good sportsman. Albon, without doubt, left the door open on that turn, but then closed it fairly quickly. And I think by that time, Lewis was committed to taking the inside line on the apex and the door shut and, you know, contact occurred. Hamilton admitted it was his fault. The thing for me, though, that spoilt it, certainly in the eyes of Carlos Sainz and McLaren fans, was that Hamilton admitted it before the race had even finished on the team radio. Didn't go to the stewards to defend it, but yet they let the podium celebration go ahead, and Sainz missed out on his first ever Formula One podium ceremony, which I thought was a bit cruel. But of course, the stewards were already dealing with a number of things at that point anyway, so I guess it took a bit of time to sort out.
Yeah, and I guess the other question would be, would Hamilton have done all of that had he not been the world champion already? Would he have admitted to it that quickly? Would he have, you know, there's one thing going and apologising to a driver, but would you admit to the stewards that quickly? Would you admit on the radio that quickly if you weren't already the champion? Because he's got nothing to lose this year, and things like that, you know, this is me sounding sceptical, but things like that can make him look good because he's already won the title, so he's got nothing to lose. So he might as well make himself look good by saying, yeah, my fault, you know, fully put my hands up. You know, so I wonder, would he have been so quick to do that had he not won the title?
It's one of those, isn't it? I think Hamilton's very good at generating his own PR, isn't he? So I think he's very good at looking good at the right moment, and occasionally when he spits his dummy out, which we heard a little bit of on the team radio. In fact, during the Brazil Grand Prix, it was just before the Vettel passed him. He was screaming at the radio, come on, guys, I need tyre information. You know, he was getting a bit het up there. But, you know, I think that we're used to Lewis now, and we know the sort of driver he is, and it's very unusual for him to make the mistake that he did with Albon.
And for me, you said it, you know, spitting your toys out the pram. Lewis does it a lot. You've said Leclerc does it a lot. Vettel has been doing it in the past. He's not so much recently, but he does do it. Verstappen does it as well. For me, all those guys are your future potential world champions again, you know, whether it be a Vettel getting another championship or one of these other guys getting their first championships. And I think that's part of it, is they've got this very aggressive, you know, this is my life and this is my car and I'm driving it. And, you know, they've got that mental attitude of I'm out for myself and I want to win a world title. And for me, I think you need a bit of that in Formula One. And, you know, there's times, I've said it before, I'm not Lewis's biggest fan. I'm very respectful of what he's done. And I think it's incredible the career he's had. And without a doubt, he's in the top three greatest of all time, in my opinion. But he does have his moments where he lets himself down. A lot of it is away from the track as well. But you can't deny what he's done. And, you know, and if you're Mercedes, do you turn around and go, well, listen, he wants to do all this stuff away from the track, but look what he's doing on the track. You know, it's like if you've got an employee at work who, if you're not doing anything illegal, you're not hurting anybody, what's the problem? Let people go and do what they want to do to let their hair down, and, you know, and then they can perform. You know, the likes of Vettel is complete opposite. He's Mr. Private Life, isn't he? And yeah, you never hear about him partying or doing anything different, or, you know. And Schumacher was the same, you know, very private man, very private back life.
Talking about outbursts on the radio, this wasn't transmitted, by the way, but Alex Albon, who we always look at as the squeaky clean boy next door type, told his race engineer to F off just before the safety car restart. The engineer was trying to feed him tyre data, let him know what all the other drivers were on for the restart, and he went, will you just F off? I'm trying to concentrate on this safety car, which I thought was good, actually, because, you know, heat of the moment type stuff, that's what you want from your young, feisty driver. You want him to be really focused and really up on the job in hand, which was good.
It must be weird though to hear someone in your ears when you know, like if you can imagine going go-karting and you've got someone in your ears going, oh, that lap wasn't very good, needs to be quicker in turn four, your tyres are going off, you know, if you've got all that information. Sometimes it's useful and helpful, but other times, you know, we've heard all the drivers say, don't talk to me in the corners, and, you know, and it must be a worry for the engineers looking, you know, on the track to see where their driver is before they speak to them. And it must be a strange experience if you're not used to it.
Check out twosoftcompounds.com for the latest news, competitions and updates.
Should we talk about McLaren then? So we mentioned Sainz, but McLaren's best result since 2012 did really well. Norris, in the earlier opening laps, had some great battles with some really senior drivers. I thought Norris, you know, put in a really good show. A little disappointed for him that he finished in eighth, because he was ahead of his teammate for a lot of the race. But it was just the way things fell and the safety car and all of that. I think Norris is one that pitted under a green flag conditions and couldn't wait in time for the safety car, so he's kind of lost out there. And also, it was a great result for the Alfa Romeos. Kimi promoted to fourth after Hamilton's penalty. Giovinazzi promoted to fifth. And it's the same weekend that he was confirmed as an Alfa Romeo driver for next year. So, good result for them. Probably the best they've had all season in terms of the two cars. And Toro Rosso, 83 points, the highest points they've ever managed in Formula One. And you've got to say that Pierre Gasly thoroughly deserved the second place on the podium. His team radio, when he crossed the line, he was in tears. It was great. I was made up for him because, of course, he's had a real roller coaster of a season.
And what was interesting I found in the stats was the highest he ever finished as a Red Bull driver was fourth. Highest he finished as a Toro Rosso driver, second. And I know Vettel had a win with Toro Rosso, didn't he, as well? So these drivers, you know, they can do very well in these cars that are not meant to be as good as the other ones. It's like what we were saying about, you know, Renault and the McLaren team. You know, Renault, in theory, should be the better car because it's the works team. And the Red Bull is the works team, so that should be the better car. But it's interesting that he got a second with Toro Rosso. But yeah, I agree with you. Great drive. I think the ending of the race, it reminded me, I was smiling a lot at the end, and it was one of those races where you think, oh, that was great. That was just what we needed. Could have been a very boring processional race, but that's exactly what we needed. You know, really spicy accidents and all sorts of incidents all over the track, and people finishing in positions they should never have finished in. But just great. That's, you know, that's what makes you smile. That's what makes you an F1 fan. That's what makes you enjoy a race like that, isn't it?
And a real gamble for Mercedes to pit Hamilton under the second safety car, because it looked as there was that much debris on the track after the two Ferraris came together. I thought, well, this race is bound to end under the safety car. So they pitted him, and now he's gone down the order. I mean, it was a big gamble, but the safety car managed to clear with two laps remaining, which gave him the chance to get past Gasly, which he did, and then, of course, the regrettable collision with Albon. But a good, solid job in the end, although, because of the penalty, he finished in a net seventh position.
Would have been lovely to see Albon on the podium as well, actually, wouldn't it?
You know, felt really sorry for him, because I thought he drove a really solid race. And again, elbows out with the big guys of the likes of Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel, and making moves and manoeuvres. You know, if you compared Albon's overtaking moves to Bottas, you know, no-brainer. Much better driver in the Brazilian race. Bottas has got a lot to do to reboot 3.0 for next season.
And these young guns, they're brilliant, aren't they? Because like you say, they're just not intimidated. You know, your Albons, your Landos, you know, all these guys are just like, nope, I'm going to overtake you. I'm doing my own race. And it's like you say, it's great that there's no intimidation there at all. They're just coming in and going, I'm as good as you, if not better, and I'm going to prove it to you on track.
Should we get some post-race stats from Nicky?
Yep, let's get all the post-race stats from the Brazilian Grand Prix. Don't forget, you can follow him across the weekend. At Lights Out is his Twitter page. He's got some great little blogs as well that you can follow during the race. And here he is with the Brazil post-race stats.
It was a milestone afternoon for Honda Power, a big day for Pierre Gasly and Carlos Sainz, and a race which resulted in multiple rare occurrences on the podium. Here are five statistics you need to know from the 2019 Brazilian Grand Prix weekend. After becoming the 70th driver to take multiple pole positions, Max Verstappen recorded his 8th win at the 2019 Brazilian Grand Prix. It was the first time a Honda-powered car has won the Brazilian Grand Prix since Ayrton Senna won with McLaren in 1991. Verstappen led 57 laps on his way to victory, meaning that Honda-powered cars have now led over 5,000 laps of Grand Prix. Pierre Gasly recorded his first podium finish, becoming the 210th driver to appear on a Formula One podium, and making this Honda's first 1-2 since Ayrton Senna and Gerhard Berger finished first and second at the 1991 Japanese Grand Prix. Gasly is the first French driver to finish on the podium since Romain Grosjean at the 2015 Belgian Grand Prix, and the youngest Frenchman to finish on the podium, younger than Jean Alesi was on his debut podium appearance at the 1990 United States Grand Prix. 2019 is the first season that Toro Rosso have scored two podium finishes in a single season. Next up, after a 2,072-day wait, McLaren finally ended their search for a podium. Carlos Sainz became Formula One's 211th different podium finisher and scored the 100th podium for a Spanish driver. Sainz is the first driver to score points, let alone finish on the podium, having started from 20th at Interlagos. His third place beats the previous best result of 7th from that grid slot at this circuit by Marc Schorer in 1980. It was also the first podium for a Spaniard since Fernando Alonso finished as runner-up in the 2014 Hungarian Grand Prix. Kimi Raikkonen and Antonio Giovinazzi finished 4th and 5th in the Brazilian Grand Prix. It's the first time Alfa Romeo have had two drivers finish in the top five since the 1951 Spanish Grand Prix. It was also the first time the former Sauber team have finished with both cars in the top five since Robert Kubica and Nick Heidfeld finished 4th and 5th in the 2009 Belgian Grand Prix. Lastly, three stats about the podium. Firstly, the 2019 Brazilian Grand Prix marked a new record for the youngest ever average age of podium finishers. The average age of Max Verstappen, Pierre Gasly and Carlos Sainz is 3 months and 3 days younger than that of Sebastian Vettel, Heikki Kovalainen and Robert Kubica at the 2008 Italian Grand Prix. Secondly, this is the first time two drivers have scored their maiden podium finishes in the same race since Olivier Panis and Eric Bernard finished second and third at the 1994 German Grand Prix. And finally, the 2019 Brazilian Grand Prix featured no Mercedes or Ferrari drivers on the podium. The last time no Mercedes or Ferrari drivers appeared in the top three was exactly 6 years ago to the day at the 2013 United States Grand Prix.
Two soft compounds.
Thank you, Nicky. I don't know how he digs up those stats. Just amazing stuff. And you can follow him at Lights Out on Twitter. Another quick stat for you. Red Bull smashed the pit stop record 1.82 seconds. I think it was for Albon. It may have been for Verstappen. I can't remember which
it
was.
Ridiculous.
But 1.82 seconds.
Which is just over a blink, isn't it? A blink's got to be a second. So that
just is unbelievable.
Ridiculous speed.
And we have to say well done to the Honda team. At one point, when it was Albon in second and Gasly in third, it was going to be a Honda 1-2-3 in the finish. And when you consider the journey Honda had, coming back into the sport with McLaren and underperforming and then switching to the Red Bull team, I think they've just done phenomenally well. And their power unit has gone from strength to strength all this season, and hopefully with some more improvements next year. You know, we are looking at 2020 perhaps being one of the most exciting years in Formula One history. When you think about the combinations and you think about the likes of Max and Leclerc and, of course, Hamilton and Vettel, all those battles that could be there next year with the minimal rule changes, I think it's really exciting.
Yeah, and I suppose a lot of people think it's going to be, you know, boring next year because nothing changes. But actually, like you say, it could be the other way around, where because everything stays the same, you know, all these teams kind of get up there and we have, you know, races like we did at the weekend where just everybody gets involved. But Abu Dhabi is next, and that is the last race. It's on the 1st of December, I think it is, isn't it? So that is next week, and we'll be back to preview that next week on the podcast. But in a nutshell, it's a dust. Is it hot in Abu Dhabi at that time of year?
Yeah, it's still. Well, you know, it's coming. The temperature's coming down every day in December in Abu Dhabi. But having lived there for 8 years, it's normally okay in December. It should be. Should be like an English summer's day in the daytime. And then as the sun sets, which it does during the race, then a fairly cool evening. So, yeah, it should be okay.
Beautiful. All right. We'll be back next week then to look at the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. And in the meantime, have a great week.
Have a great week.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.